Okay, good morning. Today's shiur is sponsored by Nishmas Yisrael Nason Ben Zvi for his yahrzeit. Then Neshama should have an aliyah. Thank you for that. Okay, we have, obviously there's a lot of things we could talk about. We have only this one shiur before the Yantif of Pesach. Two or three quick things about, just to finish up about Chol HaMoed, that we had the schus of learning the last 2 weeks, and then some halachos of Pesach, and then just a few reviews of what we learned on Yantif last year. One thing about Chol HaMoed, you had asked in regards to nails. We were discussing cutting nails and filing nails. I'm not going to review that, but someone had asked a question, I think it was you or somebody, as far as if the nail hurts, are you allowed to remove it? So at that point, I wasn't sure because there wasn't really an Indian of Malacha, even though by Shabbos, by Goizis, we had a heter. But the Paiskim say that also on Chol HaMoed, if the nail hurts, you are allowed to cut it off. And the reason is a different reason. The whole sugya of nails is a very complicated sugya in regards to the Rishayim. It's a big machlokes. Since there are those that say straight out that you're allowed to cut your nails on Chol HaMoed, so we said how we paskin, that we don't paskin like that unless you cut it before, then you're allowed to cut it again. But since there are paiskim that say explicitly you're allowed to, so we say that if you're in pain, you are allowed to cut your nails on Chol HaMoed. If it's halfway off, even if it's not more than halfway off, like we discussed by Goizis a few weeks ago, but that you're allowed to do on Chol HaMoed because it is more lenient. Also, I don't remember if I mentioned this, but a person is allowed to bite their nails on Chol HaMoed. It's a bite with their fingers, and it seems like from the Paiskim, from the Mishnah Berurah, that you're allowed to just go straight out and just do it with your fingers. Meaning the whole issue that we have, because nails are more lenient, is much more lenient than hair cutting, so then we say that you're allowed to go ahead, even on purpose, and go ahead and remove it with your fingers or with your teeth. One last issue as far as Chol HaMoed, and then I want to move on, finished with Chol HaMoed, is we did not give this example in the morning, but I discussed it in the Tuesday night class. Someone asked it, and I spoke to Rabbi Sachs, as far as the Chol HaMoed activity of going to these ceramic places that you paint on the ceramic. I did that on a date once with my wife. Our name is Mud or something like that in Manhattan. But there's a similar place, I think, in Oradell we went to one time.
One in Montclair.
So is that allowed on Chol HaMoed or not? So, as you know, all the discussions we were discussing last time, is the only way it's a tzorech hamoed. Why is it a tzorech hamoed? If the enjoyment is considered, that's the tzorech for the moed. Like we discussed apple picking and fishing, if the enjoyment is allowed. As far as so we'll get to that in a second. As far as if it's a maisa hedyot or a maisa uman, so I totally assumed that it would be a maisa hedyot. I mean, I'm walking in there with my wife and kids, and you know, how could that be considered a professional act when I'm a professional painter? I'm walking in there with my kids and we're just painting. That's tzoveya. Of course, that's not allowed on Shabbos or Yontif, but is that a maisa uman? I can't imagine that's considered a maisa uman. So I asked Rabbi Sachs if that would be considered a maisa uman or a maisa hedyot, because there are those that told me that no, they heard that it is considered a maisa uman. So Rabbi Sachs says, well, you can't do it because there's no tzorech hamoed. The enjoyment, like I told you last week, he holds that enjoyment is not considered a tzorech hamoed. So I said, fine, but let's just say for a second that it is a tzorech hamoed. Is that a maisa uman or a maisa hedyot? So he didn't want to answer the question because he said it's not okay because you can't do it because it's not a tzorech hamoed. But I would just tell you that if you do go with those opinions that apple picking is permitted and going to a farm is permitted or picking, that of course not allowed on Shabbos Yontif, and you assume that the tzorech hamoed is the enjoyment part of it and fishing and those things, so then if that would be considered enjoyment, it would be enjoyment over here also, that's also tzorech hamoed. I would imagine that this is considered a maisa hedyot. You walk in there and you just start painting, then I would imagine that would be permitted if you rely on the heter of the enjoyment being a tzorech hamoed.
Even though it can't be completed without the glazing, which is a maisa uman?
Huh? The glazing is a maisa uman? Maybe.
For sure.
Yeah, but you're not doing it, but you know that a goy is doing it. Technically, they could do it after. They could do it after Chol HaMoed. You have 30 days to pick it up or something. At least in Manhattan, I know it was 30 days to pick it up. I don't remember what it was in Oradell, but I don't think that's a problem. They could totally do it after Yontif.
Going to something like their circus or their Uncle Meshi concert.
I'll see you there. Yeah.
Right. So those, like, you're allowed to drive, but.
So you're allowed to drive because that's your enjoyment. That's the, you have a Chol HaMoed trip. We all drive to Chol HaMoed trips.
It's torture.
It's torture to go or to not go?
To go.
To go, okay. So then maybe you have no heter to drive. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you can't go.
But why is that, like, enjoyment considered okay? And why is enjoyment
See, the driving, the thing is like this. That's a good question, but I think the answer is like this. That if you have, as far as the driving is concerned, you have a destination. So your driving is considered a tzorech. Now, if what you're doing in that destination is forbidden, then you're right. Then maybe the driving would be forbidden also. But I don't think sitting, you know, okay, maybe you have to pay the guy at the door, but, you know, you're really not doing anything usser. I mean, maybe if you take a picture, that's a different issue, but which we discussed taking pictures on Chol HaMoed. But if you're sitting there, you're really not doing anything forbidden by sitting there at the Barclays Center and, you know, watching the circus. The problem is that you're driving there, but if you're permitted to watch the circus, which you are permitted to watch a circus on Chol HaMoed, of course, so then the driving there has a heter, because it's a Maisa Hedyot. We said driving's a Maisa Hedyot, and you have a tzorich, you have a destination to go to, you know. So then it wouldn't be a problem to go on a subway or to drive there. And that's what we assume by all Chol HaMoed trips.
Even though that's also the same reason of enjoyment, it's okay because you're just sitting and watching?
Yeah, no, you don't even need a heter of enjoyment because you're not doing anything wrong. I'm just sitting there. Maybe it's not Shabbos Tik or Yom Tov Tik, but we're not doing it on Shabbos Yom Tov. We're doing it on Chol HaMoed. So that's permitted. I don't see, you know. If you take a picture, that's the other issue as far as why we said it's permitted to take pictures on Chol HaMoed, those who take pictures on Chol
HaMoed. Yeah, because you won't get the
opportunity. Right, so it could be Dev Ravid, you have a tzorich to enjoy. Fine. That's finished with Chol HaMoed. As far as halachas of Pesach, of course, there's so many things we could talk about in regards to halachas of Pesach. We're going to discuss a few of the basics and what I feel is necessary for women to know. Let's start with the following. There are two methods of getting rid of chametz. Two methods that we have to get rid of chametz. There is, as you know, there's an avera in the Torah. It's called bal yirah, bal yimatzei. You're not allowed to own chametz. You're not allowed to see chametz that you own. So you have to get rid of your chametz. We have two methods brought in the Gemara that tell us how do we avoid transgressing this avera of bal yirah and bal yimatzei, besides not eating chametz, but to own it and to see it that you own. So that we have two methods of getting rid of it. One of them is called bittul, to nullify the chametz. Beis yud tes vav lamed. You resolve firmly in your mind that all the chametz that you own is like afra da'ara, it's like the dust of the earth, and it's considered hefker. Whole lamdas how it works exactly, but it's not yours anymore. It's considered irrelevant, and you don't want it anymore. It's a paragraph that we say at night by the B'dikas Chametz. We say that paragraph again. The men can say it for the women should be listening and say, to say amen, I'm not sure, but the women don't have to say it themselves. They could listen from the men in their family. They say that paragraph of bittul. I don't think you have to say amen. Oh. I don't think so. Oh. Let me check up to that again, but I don't think so. Definitely it's not ma'akev, that's for sure. So that's method number one, to do bittul, to nullify the chametz. Method number two, as you all know, which I'm sure you've all been doing already, is to clean and search for the chametz. And then step number two in that is to burn the chametz on Erev Pesach. So those are the two methods. Number one is to simply do bittul, and number two is to find the chametz, burn the chametz. You find it and you burn it, and that is how you get method number two of getting rid of the chametz. The question is, why do we need both methods? Why isn't it sufficient with just one of them? It wouldn't make much easier if we could just do method number one and not have to do method number two. Why do we need both methods? And the answer is very simple. If we would just have method number two of looking for the chametz, finding the chametz, and burning the chametz, that, you could all guess why is that not enough with just method number two? It's because, let's say you miss something. Even the most expert housewife, as far as cleaning and checking, if she misses something, then the family did not do bittul, then they're in big trouble. Let's say they didn't find something. So of course, it's obvious why we can't have only method number two. We can't have only method number one. Why not? There are two reasons given why we can't have only method number one just to do bittul, and that is the following. Reason number one is that since it depends on a person's mindset, that they have to firmly resolve in their mind that the chametz that I have is irrelevant and it's not important to me, we are afraid that if somebody has chametz that is very expensive, let's say schnapps or something like that, a loaf of bread is not so expensive, a box of Cheerios is not so expensive, but if they have some expensive chametz, we're afraid that even though they say it in their mind, or they say it, but they really don't mean it, and they don't really mean to be mafkirit and to make it ownerless because it costs a lot of money. Because of that, we tell the person, don't just simply do it in your mind, rather you should also find the chametz and get rid of the chametz. We'll talk about selling the chametz in a moment, but that is reason number one why it's not enough just to do bittul, because we're afraid that the bittul itself won't be sufficient. A second reason why the bittul is not enough, also something that I think you could guess, is the following. If we only do bittul and we don't get rid of the chametz, what's going to be? We're going to open up our cabinet on Pesach, and we're going to see a cookie right in front of us. Since we're so used to eating chametz throughout the rest of the year, we just quickly make a bracha and we pop it in our mouth. We are afraid that if you just simply do bittel and you don't get rid of the chametz, then the chametz is sitting right in front of you. By mistake, someone may come to eat it. But that's only if, you know, it's sitting there in the cabinet, it's right in front of you, so we're afraid you may come to eat it. So that is reason number two why it's not enough just to do bittel. You have to take the chametz, get rid of the chametz, either eat it up before, or you find it and you burn it. Because of this, a very important halacha, and it could be it's too late, but a very important halacha. If you have a big, huge cookie behind your refrigerator or behind your stove, you do not need to get rid of it before Pesach, because you have nothing to be suspicious about. First of all, you did bittel. Either you or the man in your family did bittel. And number two is that we're not afraid you're going to eat that on Pesach. We only have a suspicion when it's sitting right there in front of you, right in your cabinet. It's not tucked away. But if it's behind the refrigerator, or behind the stove, or behind the dresser, something very heavy that you're not going to go ahead and go ahead and move it. It's not just sitting right in front of you. You know it's like deep in the cracks of your ceiling or in your floor, and you know it's there, but it's not sitting right in front of you. You do not need to get rid of that before Pesach. You can get rid of it before Pesach, and yes, it's nice once a year to do some cleaning, but as far as Hilchos Chametz is concerned, you're not obligated to move out your refrigerator, to move out your stove, anything that on Pesach you it takes effort, and we're not afraid you're going to make come to do that on Pesach to go eat the chametz. By that time, you'll chop what you're doing. So there, technically, you do not need to get rid of it. Underneath your dishwasher, deep, deep underneath the stove, if you want to vacuum there, and you know you hear the chametz get chopped up, and it's such a smack of sound, and you know you feel so good when it happens, you can, and no one's stopping you. But as far as halachically, you do not really need to do that. As far as selling the chametz, that's an extra chumer that we all have the meaning to do. That we sell the chametz. There's a number of reasons why we sell the chametz besides doing these two methods. The third method of selling the chametz, we sell the pots and pans even perhaps as far as the blias is concerned, but maybe since it's in our ownership, so then we automatically own it, and maybe a bittel can't work if it's sitting right there in my house. I have to sell that part of my house. Of course, you all know we sell the chametz as well, but technically speaking, the main two ways to get rid of chametz is those two methods, and I just wanted to bring out that halacha that if you have something, even though you know it's there and it's bigger than a kazayas, if it's far away and it's hard to get to, technically you do not need to get rid of it. The night before Erev Pesach, as you know, we do Bidikas Chametz. I can give a whole 45-minute shiur about the halachas of Bidikas Chametz. We're just going to say one halacha that I think a lot of people do not realize. The Shulchan Aruch says that a person should not talk after the bracha on Bidikas Chametz is made until the Bidika is over. Until the searching for the Chametz is over, a person should not talk. Not only the man who makes the bracha, but even the rest of the people. Every single person over bar mitzvah and over bas mitzvah has an obligation of bedikas chametz. Bedikas chametz is not a chiyuv only on men. It's a chiyuv for women as well. So every man and woman over bar mitzvah and bas mitzvah has a chiyuv. They fulfill the mitzvah with the man in their family that is doing the bedika. Preferably nobody should talk from when the bracha is made until the bedika is over. The halacha is that if somebody does talk, even the person who made the bracha, you do not repeat the bracha, you just stop talking, and then you hold on a second, then you finish the bedika. But just because we don't repeat the bracha if someone talks, that doesn't mean a person could go right ahead and talk. Shulchan Aruch tells us a person should not talk. A person is allowed to say Asha Yatzar if the person goes to the bathroom. A person is also allowed to make a bracha on thunder and lightning. There's no bracha on snow, but on thunder and lightning, a person does make a bracha during that time, and a person is allowed to talk things that are nogeya to the bedika, like we have by, even I wash for bread, we discussed these halachas last summer, as far as talking out in between, past the salt or a knife, things like that are really nogeya to what you're doing, then a person is allowed to talk. So to over here, someone's allowed to say, oh, is this chametz? Did you check over here? You know, things that are relevant to the bedika, that is also allowed. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says, if the phone rings, a person is allowed to answer the phone and say, I'm sorry, I can't talk now in the middle of bedika, I'm in the middle of doing bedika's chametz, searching for the chametz, and then you hang up. You're allowed to answer the phone and say that, but more than that, for stam to shmuz, a person should not do. How long is the bedika that you should do, whatever the men in your family do? Some people do 5 hours of bedika, even though it's all been cleaned, and the wife says, well, you don't trust me, you don't think I clean. Some people just simply do the bedika of checking for the 10 pieces of bread, and that's it. each person should do what your minig is. Yeah.
So I did want to ask a shayla about this natzer of sex, a different rub, but my husband, like, we go around as a family until we find the 10 pieces of bread, and then my husband continues for his endless bedikah, and I go back to my own thing. I don't want to continue with him for his... So I will talk at that point.
Okay, like, so you asked the shayla and you were told what?
I was told I do not have to continue the bedikah with my husband.
What I will tell you to do is that once you finish that part of the bedikah, and that's it, it's been enough for you, and your husband's going to continue the rest of the house, you should say that paragraph of Kol Chamir V'Chamir. This way your bedikah is finished. You don't have to say it together with your husband. You each could say it by yourself. Why not? So if you want to go ahead and talk, you say that paragraph, and then later when your husband, 2 o'clock in the morning, finishes his bedikah, I don't mean your husband, I'm just saying, like, some men really like to do check for hours and hours, and I think Rabbi Schwab told me that, Rabbi Shimon Schwab, and he used to check for hours the night, I believe,
yeah,
I believe that's what he
told me.
So, and that's great, fantastic. But I would tell the women, if they want to stop early and finish, so they should say that paragraph, and then they're finished. Their bedikah's over. And then let the husband
continue. But you have to stop after the 10 pieces.
And I also just read in the Haggadah.
Yeah, preferably only once the 10 pieces are found.
But it has to be by candlelight. And then I didn't even mention... Well, it, no, I'm
candlelight
sorry.
Candlelight
is... It did
okay, so that's far as candles, flashlights, night, day... Talk about that afterwards. I have that all on this part of the page. We're not going to get into that.
What about if you're going, like, away and you're not going to be in your own house?
Right. So,
what if you're, like, leaving?
So, if you're leaving before the night before, meaning this year it's Sunday night. So, if you're leaving before Sunday night, so you would do bedikah, you do have to check, but you don't make a bracha. The bracha that you look up in the Haggadah, you see there's a bracha for bedikas chametz, you don't make the bracha.
Oh, so you
but you
do
it, but you do have to
you
check.
Do everything without the bracha.
Correct.
You say kol chamira?
Yeah. No, you only say kol chamira at that time. You don't want to be mevatel all your chametz on Matzah Shabbos. Let's say you're leaving your house on Matzah Shabbos. Okay. You don't want to... Well, if you're leaving and everything in the house, I mean, yeah, perhaps you could, but you the paragraph you would say at the regular time, the same time.
How about, like, because my husband, I've tried to do this, but I found when you have little kids... It's really hard, cause you know, they barely make it through washing, but but you washing a kid, it's just hard enough to not talk.
Don't worry about the kids. As far as the kids talking, don't worry about it.
They want you.
Okay, so you'll tell them beforehand. I can't talk until. And if you feel like the 10 pieces are found already, like she pointed out, if the 10 pieces are found already, and you feel like you really need to talk, so say your paragraph, and then you can talk, and then your husband will continue. That's what I would think. I didn't see that anywhere, but I would imagine. That's why I told my students in Beis Yaakov. They asked the same question, and because one of the students asked that her father goes, no, why do I need to talk to them? I'm saying at this point, I'm saying they know. And most of the things I need to talk to them about are relevant to the Bidika anyway, so I'm allowed to talk to them. But said her father does the house, and then he goes to the office. And talks and checks over there. So she wants to know, is she not allowed to talk till her father comes back from the office? So I told her, I said, it's a good question. I said, maybe your father shouldn't, if he's relying on the same bracha, fine, the hell to worry about that. But that's why I said, well, before you, when your father leaves the house, say that paragraph, and then you're finished.
And one more thing, if we're leaving for the whole Pesach, so we choose one room, so all of the 10 pieces of bread should be
Choose one room because you could sell that room.
We're selling the house.
Okay, right? Except for one room, okay. For Kenan Agaf,
let's say. Okay,
yeah.
Fine. So we only do one room, right?
Okay,
the 10 pieces should be in that one room, right?
Let's say, okay, fine. Yeah, if that's the only room, if at that point that you only own, if you only own that part of the house, yeah, you have to do bedikah on something that you own. Mm-hmm. So if you leased out your house already at Sunday night, but usually it's not leased out until Monday afternoon, until Erev Pesach.
I'm saying, yeah, but for the bedikah, you still...
For the bedikah, you still own that house, so then that's your house. You have to do the checking.
But our husbands have sold it already.
Except one room.
If you sell it to the rabbi...
I'm not following what he's saying.
The sale doesn't go into effect. I only have to clean one room in my house, right?
Selling
okay,
all
let's say, because the rest you're leasing out?
Yeah, you're selling it.
The best is to get rid of the chametz, those two methods, besides selling it. We don't rely only on selling it. Okay, so then so if you're going to rely just on selling and you get off, you will do the room, then I guess. Fine.
So if you're coming back,
let's move on. Can I? I didn't realize bedikas chametz would take so long. I should have known for the women. Like, this is.
If I'm coming back for the second days, getting rid of
everything,
so could I say that last one?
You could say it, but you say it on Sunday night. You'll say that paragraph. You'll say it on Sunday night wherever you are. You don't have to say standing next to your chametz. You could be far away from your house.
The person next to you
say the
paragraph. I'm not going to talk. I'm going to
sleep. Okay, so you do the checking, but without the bracha. The bracha itself you don't make.
But I'll say the bracha on Sunday night.
Well, wherever you're checking there, if you're doing the bedikah over there. Yeah.
Okay.
Depends. Yeah.
If you're going to the whole Pesach and you're doing bedikah, let's say, Motzei Shabbos,
why would you even hide bread? You're not making bracha.
Well, because that could be right. Could be if you're doing the maybe if you're doing just a bedika. If you're not making a bracha, then there's no issue of a bracha batala. Could be you don't even have to put out the 10 pieces of bread. Let me check into that again. Let me look into that. Okay, next part, Haseba, we're going to have to skip. Haggadah. As far as saying the Haggadah, women are obligated to say the Haggadah by the Seder. There is, for men, it's an obligation mid deraisa. For women, there's a machlokas whether they are obligated on a deraisa level or on a derabanan level. That's a machlokas. Even though it's a mitzvah, I say shahazman grama, that comes at a set time, and you would think women are pater, but we have a rule, afhen hoibos anes, and we say that women are obligated. There's a machlokes, whether usually that only obligates them on a derabbanan level, perhaps over here it's a deraisa level, but definitely you are obligated. If you're busy in the kitchen, back and forth, there are certain parts of the Haggadah that are considered more important than others, Pesach Matzah Amar and the Ten Makos. Preferably a person should say the entire thing, but if you find that you can't, not just, oh gosh, it's so long. You should try to say the whole Haggadah, but if you really, really can't, then there are parts that are more important, like we just mentioned. A person should really try to know the translation to the Haggadah. If it means having an art scroll, Haggadah, or Maxwell House, or ShopRite, whatever it is, so be it. There are men that, you know, that have that Haggadah, and the best is to know the translation of what you are saying.
If your husband is reading, you have to actually say the words.
You should say the words also. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, preferably. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Are you Yotze if someone says it for you? Perhaps. I think I saw recently that maybe not over here because it's a special Vihigadata Levincha that you should say it, Bidavka, not just to have Shomea Ka'ona. It could be, maybe I saw the Rabbi Sachs's Haggadah. I'm not sure. I don't remember where I saw that. I was doing some research into this last Shabbos. I don't remember. I came across that. Fine. Definitely it's preferable to say it yourself. As far as the Dalet Kaisis, I should have mentioned before that, as you all know, Rabbi Sachs gave a shiur in Hilchos Pesach for women at some point this past week. I do not know what he spoke about, except for one thing that Mrs. Shanker happened to mention to me, that the Rabbi Shanker mentioned to me that he was talking about. I'm hesitant to say things that he already spoke about because I wouldn't want to come out, as you all know, that there's machlokas is about everything almost in halacha. And the question is how you come out l'halacha. So something that he would say one way, I would be hesitant to say the opposite. If any of you were there, one thing the Rabbi Shanker told me that he spoke about was Dalet Kaisis, about the obligation for women to drink Dalet Kaisis. All I know, all I'm going to tell you is that the others that say that a person needs to have, even a woman needs to have only wine, there are those that say that a woman could have grape juice, there are those that say even men could have grape juice. At the end of his life, the Chazon Ish drank grape juice without hesitation, the Brisker Rav drank grape juice. As I'm sure some of you know, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that you can't fulfill the Dalet Kaisis with grape juice. Nothing to do with men or women. For women, we usually have more of a leniency that a person will be allowed to drink grape juice. I know Rabbi Sachs is very strong about the fact, and Rabbi Shanker even told me that he said this, that a person should drink the entire cup, however big your cup is.
No, that is not what he said at all.
No?
Not at all.
That's what he told me he said.
No. He said all you need is like 1 ounce, and then you only have to drink most of that.
Rove cups. Okay, fine. So there's different levels as far as...
Good,
I'm happy you told me. There's different preferences. There's a preference to drink the whole cup. There's a preference to drink a whole revius. Then there's the preference of Rove cups, which is whatever, however big your cup is, then 51% of that. There's different advantages to each one. If a person wants to have grape juice and you want to dilute it, that's also an advantage. I saw once to have 4% alcohol, so if it's 8% alcohol, you would have half the cup of wine and then the rest would be grape juice. You should do what you've been doing until now. I'm not going to come here and start making big changes, whether l'chumra or l'kula, of what you're allowed to do. Whatever, you ask your husband what he's comfortable letting you do. For sure, if you drink grape juice, you will have what to rely on. And for sure, if you want to be machmir and drink only wine or to dilute, there is what to be stringent about in regards to the Dalet Kaisis. But just for sure, you should know that women are obligated in having the 4 cups of wine, just like men. It's only a derabanan, but afhein hoyibos anes obligates them in the Dalet Kaisis. If you want to try and get a smaller cup, that is, of course, more than a revius, about a smaller cup, and you could drink a majority of the cup, then for sure, that would be good. You don't have to. By no means do you have to drink the entire cup each time. Sorry?
Does it have to be purple?
Does it have to be purple? Red is what the Mishnah Berurah says is preferable to be red. Rav Moshe says Tokay wine is also considered red. We discussed by Tzoveya over a year ago, those of you who remember, as far as mixing red and white wine, even though we said usually by food it doesn't make a difference, but here you want it to be red. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says to do with a shinoi, right, to do in the opposite order. But if you're mixing it on Yontif,
first to pour in the red.
Right, for, you know, normally what you would do is you would pour in, right, so you would put in the white and then you pour in the red. So here you should do the opposite. You should do the red and then you would pour in the white if you want to mix with white wine. But yeah, like you said, the Mishnah Berurah says it's preferable to have red wine by the Seder. The most common question I guess get asked as a Moel is it supposed to be red wine by a bris? I said, no, that's only by the Seder. You're supposed to have red wine. By a bris, you don't have to have red wine, even though it's for the blood. But, you know, sorry?
A wedding?
No, you're not supposed to have. Yeah, you're not supposed to ruin the gown.
Your gown. Yeah.
Fine. Right there. Matzah. How much matzah is supposed to be eaten? So, it's a big discussion even for men. So, first of all, it's important to know that women are obligated to eat matzah by the Seder on a de'iraisa level. Even though it's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, and even though we have afin hoi bos anes, that they were also in the miracle, you would think that only obligates them midrabanan. Here they are obligated midderaisa. The Gemara learns it out from a pasuk. The pasuk compares chametz to matzah. So just like women are obligated not to have chametz, because that is a lo saseh, so they're also obligated to matzah, just like men. There's a big discussion, how many kezayis of matzah, one or two, needs to be eaten for motzi matzah. The Shulchan Aruch says two. One for motzi and one for matzah. The Bir Halacha has a big discussion. He really holds that it's not necessarily true. The Chazon Ish said it's enough to have just one kezayis. Many paiskim say that for women at least, even though they're really obligated just as much as men, but for women it's hard to have two kezayis of matzah, and then besides Mara and Kairech and Afi Kaimin, so we are able to be lenient. I heard this from paiskim, that a woman could be lenient and have one kezayis of matzah by Moitzi Matzah. If you see your husbands or you see the men in your family being machmer to have two kezayis, don't think they're crazy. Like, well, where does it come from? The Shulchan Aruch says he's supposed to have two kezayis by motzi matzah. But we say that women could have one kezayis. As far as how much is a kezayis, I was just looking up. I had a minute. I looked up on the shelf I have here, Rabbi Bonner Sefer on the Bachas of Kezayis. You'll see the pictures that he says. He gives three different pictures because it depends on the thickness of the matzah. There are some matzahs that are very thick, some matzahs that are very thin, some matzahs that are in between. So how much is a kezayis of each would depend on the thickness of the matzah. So whether it's a third of a matzah, 41% of a matzah, or 53% of a matzah, it would depend how much is a kezayis. And then if you want to eat two kezayis, you would have double of that. So that's a mitzi matzah, that's an obligation. Midiraisa, generally we assume that women can, it's sufficient with one kezayis.
For the whole Seder.
If you can, for sure. Is it better to? Yeah, it's better to.
But it's one kezayis for the whole.
For motzi matzah. Then besides what's for korech, that's separate. Korech, we have another kezayis. Yeah.
Okay.
Next is maror. As you all know, we have two types of maror that you'll find on the table. There's the lettuce, there's the romaine lettuce, and there is what we call the white stuff, which is the horseradish. So it's the Mishnah tells us that you're supposed to have chazeres. So the question is, what's the exact translation of chazeres? Is chazeres what we call the romaine lettuce, or is chazeres what we call the horseradish, the white stuff that is really bitter? The question, so there are different opinions to each side. The question that I'm sure you've all wondered at some point, or at least you've heard asked at some point, is how in the world can we fulfill our mitzvah of maror with the romaine lettuce? It's not bitter, right? We use the romaine lettuce later by Shulchan Aruch for our salads. So how can we consider that bitter? It's supposed to be by maror's chareyim. It's supposed to represent the bitter. It's not bitter whatsoever. So the Mishnah Berurah says that the reason is the following. That this lettuce eventually would turn bitter, even whether it would stay in the ground for longer or whether even if it's out of the ground, besides that it spoils and rots. Every food is like that. But eventually this lettuce would turn bitter. And the Shulchan Aruch seems to say that it's better to use the romaine lettuce for maror because that symbolizes the shibud in Mitzrayim. The Mishnah Berurah says that that is exactly like the shibud in Mitzrayim. The Gemara says, I'm sure you all know, that in the beginning, the shibud, the hard work, was really not so hard. Mm-hmm. The Mitzrayim helped out. The Gemara says even that Paroi helped out in the working and they paid them to do the work. Then eventually the Mitzrayim backed out and they made the Yidden do it by themselves. And then they eventually had them, they started to hit them and they had the Avodas Perech, the hard back-breaking labor. So that is exactly like the romaine lettuce, that it starts off sweet and then eventually turns bitter. So there's even an advantage to using the roaming lettuce for the maror, because that is similar to the shibud in Mitzrayim. Definitely there are those that say that you should also have some of the white stuff to have the bitter, first of all because maybe that's the correct translation, the horseradish, and also because there are those that say it should be bitter. I heard a whole shir last year, someone came to Pesach and gave a whole shir in BTU that it's, you're not allowed to mix the two, and because one of them is wrong, one of them is the correct mara, one of them is the incorrect mara, so them is balancing out the taste and therefore it's not good. If you see somebody having, what I would tell you to do is have a kazayas of the roaming lettuce, for sure for the women that could be a little bit more lenient since it's not as bitter, have a kazayas of the roaming lettuce. And then if you want to sprinkle on some white stuff, right, the men are going to try to be macho and they'll sprinkle on a lot of the white stuff. You don't have to stop them, they could do that, there is a basis for that, but if you want to sprinkle on the white stuff, you can. If you don't really, if it really bothers you a lot, you could have just the kazayas of the roaming lettuce. The Chazon Ish holds that the roaming lettuce that we eat has to be a little bit bitter, it has to start turning bitter a little bit, but the Mishnah Berurah doesn't say that, and doesn't seem like that's the meaning, that the roaming lettuce that we use is just simply totally not bitter right now, but eventually it would turn bitter. I didn't say you shouldn't. I didn't say you shouldn't. I never said that.
The shear. That it's preferable to have just the lettuce and then after, like have a kazayas. Is that a known shita or that?
To have afterwards, I didn't say that either.
No,
that's definitely not the common opinion. Not that you're not allowed to mix the two. People mix it all the time. I myself mix it every. He started off the shear like that, and everybody was like appalled. So he tried to, you know, he wanted to grab everybody's attention. But what I will tell you to do is for sure have a kazayas of the roaming lettuce. If you want to sprinkle on the white stuff as well, kolakova for sure, that'll be fine. But I'm telling you is that for the women, if you can't, if you feel like it really bothers you to have the white stuff, so fine. So you won't have to sprinkle it on. You rely on just the roaming lettuce alone.
How about if we only eat
endive?
Is endive the same thing?
Or
it becomes more bitter?
Yeah.
You wouldn't know.
The husband's
vinegar is endive.
What?
It's not
romaine. Okay, yeah, that's true. There's a different minhagim as far as that. Yeah. I think that's all included. Yeah, I think that those that say that's also included in Chazaras.
What? I'm sure.
The endives, which is like similar.
Yeah. You can use endives, right?
Yeah. Okay. That's enough for Hilchos Pesach. Of course, like I said, there's plenty more you could talk about, Gebrachs and Kitnius. We're going to have to hold off on that. Let's just chaz very quickly a few halachos of, in general, Hilchos Yontif in the last 7 minutes. We said last year we had three classes on Hilchos Yontif, three classes of 45 minutes. We're just going to say the basics, what I think is the most important. And that is the following. As you know, Malacha, of course, is usher to do on Yontif. We have an exception of Ochel Nefesh. Something that is for cooking and for baking, that is nogeya to preparing food, that is directly connected to preparing food, is allowed to be done on Yontif. That is Ochel Nefesh. That's a pasuk in the Torah. And we say that's by all Yomim Tovim, you're allowed to do something that is Ochel Nefesh. And we came out, whole discussion, Rashi and the Rambam, you all remember, right? You're smiling, I could tell you remember. What came out practically, we're just going to get down to the practical halacha, is that the only time Ochel Nefesh is permitted to be done on Yontif is you need two conditions, right? Who remembers the two conditions? One is that it has to be that you could not, it would not have been as good if it would have been done before Yontif. That is condition number one. That if it would have been just as good if it would have been done before Yontif, if you'd be able to cook or bake something, we were talking about baked apples, to cook or bake something that would be just as good before Yontif. So then you do not have a heter to do that on Yontif. That you have to do before Yontif. That is number one. It has to be something that would not have been, that it's better to be fresh, which a lot of foods are like that. It's much better fresh. And number two is that it can't be done on a large scale, which is like two parts of that. It can't be done on a large scale, and you also can't be doing something that is normally done on a large scale, even if you're doing it on a small scale. But some type of large scale to do tons and tons and tons, that is not allowed to be done on Yontif, even if it is an Ochel Nefesh. So, and using even a kli that is used on a large scale, like a sifter, a big huge sifter, or a millstone, or something like that, that's used on, we do malacha on a large scale, that is not allowed to be done on Yontif. But generally speaking, we do things on a small scale, and therefore those would be allowed. We said, very important, and I think Rabbi Sachs came out not like this, but we did say for many, many paiskim that once something is permitted to be done on Yontif, you're allowed to just go ahead and do it straight out. You don't have to It's not. You don't have to try to do it before Yontif. You don't have to, you know, oh, it's better to do everything before. If you have something that you know is considered better, fresh, and Rabbi Yashiv and others say that you don't have to do it and put it in a refrigerator or freezer because it's usually not as good like that. And even if it would be as good, you're not obligated to do that because that's like a technical, you know, side idea of putting in a refrigerator. If something is better when it's fresh, you're allowed to go ahead and do it straight up on Yontif. There's other restrictions, but as far as trying to do it before Yontif, that's what the place can tell us. It's a Chassam Sefer, it's a Prima Godem, it's a Shulchan Aruch Harav, it's Rabbi Yashiv, it's Rav Chaim Shulevitz, and they say that the Mishnah Berurah says that as well. It's a Diak in the Mishnah Berurah, so that you could go ahead and you'd be able to do. As far as Bayer, we discussed, we had three classes on Bayer. Just to review, as far as Bayer on Yontif, most cases of Bayer are not as good if it was done before Yontif. And therefore, you're allowed to do Bayer on Yontif on a small scale because we say that it would not have been as good if it was done yesterday. Therefore, you're allowed to peel fruits and vegetables on Yontif. Not just talking about Cholamayim, talking about on Yontif itself. You're allowed to peel even with a peeler. Bayer is considered somewhat of an Eichel Nefesh activity. We don't say mitaych, but by Bayer you do have, it's for food, and it's on a small scale. You're allowed to peel. It would not be as good if it was done yesterday. Pais can tell us, if you had removed the bones from the chicken or the fish before Yontif, it wouldn't be good. The fish would fall apart, and the white fish or the chicken would fall apart. That's not how we serve fish or chicken. Therefore, you're allowed to remove the bones from your food on Yontif. That is as far as Bayer. Tochen, we'll skip Tochen, okay? We'll talk about it in a few minutes. I'd rather skip it and do other things. Tea bags are allowed to be used on Yontif. Even if it's a kli, hamayuchad lekach, a tea bag, it's still not a problem. And as far as the cooking of the tea bags that we discussed in our 8 classes on Bishul, anyways, you're allowed to cook on Yontif. And as far as the bayer we discussed, as far as the bag itself, that's also allowed to be used on Yontif. As far as moving things, we all know you're not allowed to do hachana. You're not allowed to do something on Yontif for after Yontif. You're also not allowed to do something on Yontif for the second days of Yontif. So we discussed many details in those halachas. We discussed washing dishes for the second day.
For the second day.
I'm sorry. What did I say? You're not allowed to do on the first day of Yontif for the second day of Yontif. So for tonight, I mean, like say this year Yontif is Tuesday, Wednesday. So Tuesday, you're not allowed to do something for Tuesday night. If you remember, we had one exception. There's something. Not a malacha, but you're allowed to prepare something that you would not be able to do tonight as good as you'd be able to do it right now. Meaning, what is that good? Meaning that if, let's say, I'm by somebody's house Tuesday afternoon, and they have something I want to borrow from my suda for tonight or for tomorrow, and if I would have to do it tonight, it would take me a lot of time. I'd have to go walk back to the person's house and get the item. I don't have time to do that tonight. My husband's going to come home from shul, and I need to start to say there right away. You're allowed to do hachana on the first day of Yontif, for the second day of Yontif. However, we said there were some restrictions to that. First of all, you're not allowed to do a malacha for the second day of Yontif. It can't be a malacha. So if you're carrying something from your friend's house, it has to be a neighborhood where there's an Erev. Because if there's an Erev, then you didn't do Haitzah. Haitzah is permitted, but only for a Tzairich. What about Hachana? So if you're not allowed to do Hachana for later, but if it's earlier in the day, if you wouldn't be able to get it later, so then if there's an Erev, then it's not a Malacha. You're only allowed to do preparing. Also, we said that you have to do it early enough in the day that it's not obvious. So that wipes out a lot of it. That's why I gave the example of you're by your friend's house Tuesday afternoon. It's early in the afternoon, so it's not obvious that you're doing it for tonight. Also, you have to carry it. If you're carrying, you have to do it with a shinui. You have to carry it in an abnormal manner. So I know myself, a lot of times, I think I gave this example last year, I would put sodas in the refrigerator Tuesday afternoon, like the first day of Yontif in the afternoon, for the night. So I made sure to do it early enough in the afternoon, not like right before I leave to shul for Mincha and Meir, because that's too obvious that it's for the second day. You're not allowed to do it for Chol HaMoed or for after Yontif. It has to be only for the first day Yontif, for the second day of Yontif. I did it early enough in the afternoon, and I carried the soda bottle like between my fingers. I carried it in a funny way, and that's how you're able to do that on
Yontif. So you have to have both conditions.
You have to have all conditions. It has to be only for the first day to the second day, not for Chol HaMoed. It has to be not a malacha. It has to be carried for a shinui in an abnormal way. And number four, it has to be carried early. It has to be done early enough in the afternoon that it's not obvious. You want to set the table for the second Seder. You can't set it, you know, in the evening before it's night already. It's still before night, but if it's in the evening, then it's obvious you're setting it for the second day of Yontif. So that's not... I'm sorry?
You would have to set the whole table with the shiner.
Yeah, so that may be hard. Maybe you want to put the forks and knives in the opposite way. You don't want to set the table with the shiner. So setting the table may not be too practical. You definitely don't want to hold the china plate on your fingertips. Sorry?
So you're like taking something out of the freezer.
Right. Or borrowing something from a friend, or taking something out of the freezer or the fridge. You would take it out early enough in the afternoon.
You have to wash the lettuce, onions,
and is that considered borer? Borer will be allowed, yeah. And maybe that will be okay. The bugs are muksa. bugs are muksa. It's graph shore A. Maybe it's not muksa. Definitely do it all before. But the question is, it could be it's muksa, and it could be it's a graph shore A, so it's not muksa. It could be if you're doing it for that day. As far as the chanuf afterwards, you would have to get into all these ideas. As far as borer, could be borer is not a problem because it's, you know, you're preparing it for ochel nefesh to get rid of it. Let me hold on one second. Let me just. Okay, just one last halacha. I feel bad we're not going to be able to get to anything, although anyone who wants to stay afterwards, I could stay longer. Just one halacha that is very important to say. We're not going to be able to talk about bathing and things. One last halacha is very important. As far as turning down the flame, you all know, we discussed this last time, you're allowed to raise a flame because Havara is allowed, it's an ochel nefesh act. And as far as turning down a flame is mechabe, it's kibui, that's a malacha. So the only time it's allowed to be done is for ochel nefesh purposes. Mm-hmm. Now how in the world is turning down a flame, turning down a flame for ochel nefesh, the only example you could have is if it won't burn. So if you have something on a fire, mm-hmm. and you still need it on the fire, but the fire is just too big, so you're allowed to turn down the flame. Or if you have a second flame, that's, you have one flame that's a high flame, one flame that's a low flame, the best will be to just transfer it to that lower flame, because this way you don't have to turn down the flame. To turn off the flame is never going to be permitted. Why? Because if you don't need the food on the flame, then don't turn down the flame, just take it off the fire. Just take it off. So there's never going to have a heter to turn down the flame totally. And also, the only time you'd be allowed to turn it down is if you still need it on the flame. If you really don't need it on the flame anymore, just you want it to be a little bit warm. The men are coming home in another 10-15 minutes, so you want it to be a little bit better, a little bit warm. That's not enough of a heter. So in the Piskei Tshuva, that's not enough of a heter to turn down the flame. The only time you'll be able to turn down a flame, it's a malacha. The only time you'll be able to turn it down is if you still need it on the fire, but you can't have it that high because it's going to burn. So then you'd be allowed to turn it down. People take it, you know, unfortunately, people, you know, abuse that halacha. Oh, you're allowed to raise the flame, you're allowed to lower the flame. You're only allowed to do something for ochel nefesh. So raising the flame, okay, you understand how that's ochel nefesh. So lower the flame has to be if you could just simply remove the pot from the fire. That is, if that's what you're, if you're able to do, that's what you should do. Hold on one second. But not just simply to lower unless you have to. We're going to stop here because it's already 10:03. Whoever wants to discuss other halachos as far as washing, bathing, as far as other cases of bishul, borer, tochein, definitely we can. So okay, everyone should have a wonderful yom.